Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, really excited for what we have in store tonight. Got a great guest that will give us a better idea as far as what to expect from Ole Miss side. Another continued conversation where we're really able to look at and break down a game that we've had an eye on for, really ever since it's been announced, but it's certainly been the main focus and something that we've looked to throughout the course of summer. And Monday night is something that can't get here soon enough. So excited about the entirety of the conversation that we'll have to offer and what we can bring people this evening. And just want to talk about real quickly that really excited and really fortunate to have the sponsor that we do. Louisiana Hot Sauce has been a great partner with us, has allowed us to do a lot of things that we've talked about doing for a couple years, and want to thank people for a pretty significant amount of social engagement that they've had with the Nolcast account, with the Louisiana Hot Sauce account. That is impressive on you guys. We appreciate it, and know that we don't take sponsorships unless we really are excited by the product or familiar by the product. And hot sauce is something that you and I have talked about both on air, off air for multiple years now, and really are fortunate to be able to pair with Louisiana.
Ingram, we have a special guest tonight. I know that we're looking forward to peppering him with questions on the Louisiana hot sauce line. But I do have to say before this, I did enjoy some Louisiana hot sauce tonight on some green beans. You ever had it on green beans?
It's quite good on green beans. Absolutely, I have.
And fingerling potatoes as well.
Okay. Haven't done that before. Like we talked about last episode, something both of us have been incorporating into more and more meals. Fantastic. You can pick it up at Publix. You can pick it up at whatever your local grocery store. Cost pretty significantly under $2. I'm not sure there's a better way to be budget-friendly and increase damn near any meal that you prepare in your kitchen. So, again, very fortunate to be able to pair with them and excited about what lays ahead.
All right, we're joined now on the Louisiana Hot Sauce line by Michael Borky of Super Talk Mississippi and also of Red Cup Rebellion, the SB Nation Ole Miss site. Michael, glad to have you on the Nolcast tonight.
It's good to be here, and thank you for the break, because I've been moving all day, which is a risky decision knowing that college football starts on Thursday. Moving all day Wednesday, risking the cable guy not showing up or not being able to get it right, it's kind of a bold decision, but I'm risking it anyway, and I needed this break, so thank you.
So what we typically do on the podcast is have the guests kind of fill our fan base in on what to expect from the opposition, not necessarily exactly what they're going to run and their secret game plan and whatnot, but
sure,
especially with a non-conference opponent. I think there's a lot of FSU fans who are not at all familiar with Ole Miss, and I've told them, go read Red Cup Rebellion. They do a nice job over there. They'll get you nice and informed. Who do you, on offense, so I guess we'll start there. Chad Kelly is really good. There's no doubt about it, and he's a freak. Who else do you think that Florida State fans really need to be on the lookout for who can hurt them? Because we know they lost Tunzel. We know they lost Treadwell. Who do you think has a chance to make a true name for themselves on Monday night?
Well, aside from Chad Kelly, and it's funny you mentioned that, because this time last year, Hugh Freeze was trying to convince everybody that was a three-quarterback race, and most everyone knew that that was completely false. But if you're going to look at an immediate replacement for somebody they lost in that 2013 class, of course, as you mentioned, Treadwell being gone, that receiving corps is still really talented and really deep. And no, there's nobody on that roster that's going to replace his production and going to replace the focus that defense has had to pay on Treadwell, because he was just that physically dominant as a receiver. But DeMaurier Stringfellow, who started his career at Washington, actually got into some trouble up there, ended up transferring to Ole Miss. He's a guy who physically looks just like Treadwell. He's even a little bit bigger. His problem in fall camp last year and in the last season was consistency. In the Egg Bowl, if you or Florida State fans went back and watched Ole Miss play Mississippi State or saw it live that night, that was the DeMaurier Stringfellow that Ole Miss fans have wanted to see the entire time. And he came out that night. It's just consistency. So if you're looking for a guy that will replace Treadwell as far as the exact, not the exact, because he's not Laquon Treadwell, but the big physical receiver who will be able to go up and get a ball even though he's covered, that kind of guy. And he's not really talked about a whole lot from Ole Miss, but that's the guy. The Maurier Stringfellow, a big-time receiver, or could be a big-time receiver, if he was just a little bit more consistent.
With consistency, do you mean consistency with the hands or in the routes or just kind of in his overall game and understanding where he works in the offense? What was the main thing that maybe could make the difference between last year and this year?
The word out of camp last year was just some days he would show up and be on. And other days he'd show up and not be on. It was a all-encompassing inconsistency with his play. Hands, effort, motivation. And some days he just wouldn't be on. Now, you haven't heard much about him from last year into this year. And I think that's probably a good thing because all last camp when Hugh Freeze was asked about the receivers, he would make it a point to say, Stringfellow has it, but he's inconsistent. You haven't heard any of that this camp, and he's their go-to number one receiver, at least with the way they're going to expect him to replace Treadwell as far as being that physical guy. And they love down in the red zone because I guess it's a different conversation, but Ole Miss really struggles scoring in the red zone. I mean, they are atrocious at doing so, but they had success just throwing up jump balls to Treadwell and letting him go get it. And he can be that guy, but you haven't heard any of the consistency issues this offseason. So that should be a good sign. But like you said on our podcast, you don't know until you see him play for the first week. I mean, this could be still a persistent problem. We just have no idea. But if he shored that up, he very well could be getting paid to play football next year. He's got that kind of capability. He just got to make sure he's got it all together upstairs.
And for folks at home who listen to the Nolcast consistently, they know that I also do the national recruiting gig for SB Nation. Ole Miss has recruited receiver exceptionally well. I know oftentimes on the Nolcast we talk about Florida State recruits at a really high level, and even above and beyond that, the position they have recruited just insanely well. And you'd kind of figure being in Florida is defensive back. Ole Miss is kind of like that with receiver. They have just consistently hit on the receiver position. You know, like you said, Stringfellow. How do you say Quincy's last name again? I always botch this.
It's essentially, you know, the old Southern phrase, attaboy?
Yeah.
It's attaboy Joe.
Oh, attaboy Joe. Okay. Yeah. I mean, attaboy Joe is the dude who caught the ball off the player's head in the Alabama game last year. Big-time speed. Yeah. Van Jefferson looks like in the starting lineup already at slot. Was that a surprise to people? I mean, I know he's a freshman, right? Or is he a second-year guy?
He's coming off of a red shirt.
Okay.
Yeah, he's coming off a red shirt. And DeMarcus Lodge probably, in hindsight, should have redshirted as well. He was a big-time get out of Texas, but he opted against it. Jefferson went ahead and went with the red shirt, and apparently that has made all the difference. He's bigger, runs better routes, and he comes from great stock. And that's why it's not really a surprise that he is – made his way into the starting lineup, not just because he's a talented kid, but he's more polished than most young guys because his dad is a wide receivers coach in the NFL. I believe his dad is with the Dolphins right now, and he had a long career in the NFL with multiple different franchises. So he's a little bit more polished than most. And Markell Pack got hurt in camp, and Florida State fans are, I'm sure, familiar somewhat with Markell Pack. I think he was committed there at one point, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
So he got hurt in camp and allowed Van Jefferson to make his way in, and he's not letting that spot go. It's not a surprise, but this early is, I mean, at least eye-popping for cracking the starting lineup in a receiving corps that, like you said, is so talented.
So looking here at the lineup from the Cotton Bowl blowout, where it looks like Oklahoma State, you know, hung around for a bit and then Ole Miss just really kind of put it on them. Am I reading this right, that all five offensive linemen who started that ball game are now gone?
Five offensive linemen that started ball games for Ole Miss are gone, yeah. And with the interior guys, with Aaron Morris and Justin Bell and Ben Still, no disrespect to those guys because Ole Miss got every ounce of talent out of those scholarships that they could have imagined. I mean, those guys played a lot of football for Ole Miss, but they're not talents that you're afraid of replacing with Javon Patterson and Jordan Sims, Robert Conyers. They feel pretty confident about the interior of the offensive line, the talented interior, guys that have been playing for a little while in the system, their bodies look better. The concern is tackle. And of course, with any team, it probably would be replacing a first-round draft pick, as well as Fawn Cooper, who during Tunsil's suspension slid over to the left side and was phenomenal. And he got drafted in the fifth round, and he's trying to make the Bengals right now. That's the position of concern for Ole Miss. In the offseason, they decided to slide out Rod Taylor, who was at guard, a very talented kid from Jackson. But the whole narrative surrounding him was work ethic was a bit of an issue, constantly made mental mistakes in games, but he was talented. Great feet. Hugh Freeze said that he's probably not as long as he would like his tackle to be, but he's athletic enough to play the position. But this is his first time doing it. This will be his first game playing offensive tackle as a starter. And he's been prone to make mental mistakes in the past. On the other side, you've got Sean Rawlings, who started the Alabama game, played a lot of football for Ole Miss a year ago, and he won't make any mental mistakes at all. And Ole Miss people will get upset with me for saying this because he did do very well getting thrown into the fire as a freshman to play tackle, a position he wasn't recruited to play. But he's athletically limited at the offensive tackle position. So for Ole Miss, the interior, talent-wise, experience-wise, they'll be fine there. They lost some guys, but like Justin Bell, if you go back and watch Ole Miss games, poor guy just was not an SEC offensive lineman. Just he just wasn't it. They're fine there. The tackle position is a huge question mark. And when you have a quarterback like Chad Kelly, all you have to do is give him time. But that's the big concern, is will they be able to give him time considering how talented is Florida State, or how talented Florida State is up front? Will Rod Taylor be able to contain Florida State with his constant making of mental mistakes? We'll have to see if he's improved like the coaches have said he did. We'll see.
Yo, Michael, I've noticed kind of an interesting split here. On the one hand, I've seen a lot of old Miss sites, and I believe Red Cup has this too. There's a stat out there, and I wish I remember exactly what it was, but essentially it was when Chad Kelly has 2.5 seconds or more to throw the ball, he's like the number one rated quarterback in the country or something.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I've also seen people talk about how quickly Ole Miss gets the ball out of his hands so that they minimize the importance of some of those offensive line losses. How do you think that they're going to attempt to find that mix against Florida State, you know, to be able to buy him the time to take those deep shots or to, you know, buy him time to move around where he excels so well, but also protecting the offensive line?
Well, they run that spread option, RPO type option offense. And like you said, I think that number, even though he's a good quarterback, is skewed as a result of, especially when Ole Miss struggles running the football, they will use the passing game as an extension of the run. I know it's a bit of a cliche term, but they do that, get the ball out of his hand quickly to get him comfortable and do what Hugh Freeze likes to say, stay on schedule, which is no negative plays. And that's how they do that. In order to protect against Florida State, if Rod Taylor is struggling at tackle, they won't be able to allow, without some help from the running backs, but their best pass pro running back is out for the season now in Jordan Wilkins. So you're going to see a lot of the read option, the run-pass option, and Ole Miss, like you said on Twitter today, bud, Ole Miss skirts that rule. They definitely push the boundaries of the lineman downfield rule. And Alabama knows all too well about that. There's a play, not the famous play of the ball hitting the helmet, but Chad Kelly did a simple read option, started sprinting for a first down. It was a third and short, and he pulled up and just dumped it off to Cody Core for a long touchdown. And Ole Miss had a lineman that was, you know, 5-6 yards downfield, and the rest didn't catch it. That's the kind of stuff they'll do, though. They will try to keep the defense honest. they didn't do it early last year because they were, I think they're afraid of getting Chad Kelly hurt, but he's so good at running the football and not taking the big hit that you're going to see, if Ole Miss wants to have any success, they're going to have to get Chad Kelly going with the run. And they will do that running the RPO stuff, the fake the dive, pull up and pass, or give him, it's a modern triple option, if you will. You know, the dive, the quarterback run, or pull up and throw. If they're having protection issues, they will go to that a lot.
You know, and with that, there's really, there's no real right decision to be made by the backer or by the nickel there, because it you're really wrong any choice you make when you're trying to, for folks at home who didn't necessarily play, if your read is the guard and all of a sudden the guard is releasing 5 yards up the field, your only read is run on that, you know?
Yeah.
But then if all of a sudden they're pulling up and throwing the ball to a receiver who is just ducked behind you, people at home will say, well, why didn't he look at the receiver? Well, that's not his read. He's reading that guard first until he determines it's a pass, and then he drops back. But if there's no indication that it's ever going to be a pass because you have an offensive lineman coming right at you, you know, which I think is why a lot of people are kind of like, you know, this is – I wonder about the – and this is not necessarily relevant to this game quite as much, but I do wonder about the future of college football if everybody starts to abuse this, you know?
They're just going to have to find a way, if maybe adding an official to limit that 3 yard rule,
or go to the NFL's 1 yard rule.
But find a way to enforce it, because it's not just Ole Miss that gets away with it. I mean, a lot of people do, and they're going to continue to run offenses like this and push the boundaries as long as they can continue getting away with it.
Oh, I think it's really smart to do it. I mean, I know even Saban today said in that article on Monday Morning Quarterback, the college edition, that if you're not doing this, you're putting your team at a disadvantage, you know? And
sure.
I fully agree. In fact, I've said it before. I think Jimbo Fisher in some ways is stubborn, and if he doesn't do this, his thoughts on the purity of the game and the purity of offense in some ways actually hurt Florida State. Because he doesn't feel like – it kind of feels like cheesing, you know, like back if you played Madden back in 04 or 05. What was the year where Vic was on the cover and it was just if you had him, the game just kind of wasn't really football anymore. It was sort of a different – it kind of changes the complexion of the game a lot. Let me ask you this. Is Kelly and this receiver group good enough to beat FSU if FSU makes them one-dimensional?
I don't think so. And not because Kelly's not a good enough quarterback or the receivers aren't capable, but you simply can't beat a defense as talented as Florida State if you are one-dimensional. If Ole Miss, and they did it last year, struggles to run the football, but with any sort of success, they will struggle. Look back at the Florida game last year. They couldn't get anything going. The Florida defensive line was just man among boys that night. But that's a tough question because they're able to do it against lesser opponents, but I don't think so. And again, not because Kelly's not good or the receivers aren't good, but you can't be one-dimensional and beat a Florida State. You have to have success running the ball to keep that defense honest, or they're going to pin their ears back and come at you.
I think it presents a really interesting challenge for Florida State in that FSU has to attempt to take the option out of the spread option, but yet not overcommit so much. Because if I'm playing against Chad Kelly and this Ole Miss offense, at least from what I've seen, my number one goal, honestly, is to not allow the big play. Because I Ole Miss seems to be really good at hitting big plays, but they're not always so good at driving the field consistently and executing without shooting themselves in the foot sometimes. And especially, I feel like they're not always great in the red zone. You know, it's kind of one of those things like, you know what,
you're being nice. Last year, they were atrocious. And the year before, even worse. So they are not good in the red zone at all.
If you can kind of, if you're able to limit the run game without giving up the huge pass play, and I'm not saying shut down the run game completely, but, and you make Ole Miss kind of try to drive in chunks as opposed to in bombs, I think with the physicality of the DBs, I think that's probably Florida State's play. And I'm not saying sit back and play total soft defense, but selective pressure, you know, and then take your chances if Ole Miss gets to the red zone and hope that you can hold them to 3 and not 7 type stuff.
Sure. And Chad Kelly early last year, even though some, and Jeff Gray, I think, was the one that wrote it, but it was on Red Cup Today about how a good bit of Chad Kelly's interceptions were footballs that probably should have been caught. He's a risk taker, and early on took too many risks, and it led to bad turnovers. He cleared that up late. I think he accounted for 16 touchdowns and one turnover in their last 4 games, and those games included LSU at Mississippi State and the Sugar Bowl. So he was much better down the stretch of decision-making, but that should be the play, I think, because like you said, Ole Miss is so good at the big play, because if Chad Kelly gets time, he's got a great deep ball. I mean, one of the best in the country. It's beautiful. Got a really strong arm and really accurate with the deep ball. So if you give him that opportunity, he can beat you. So even though Florida State, as Evan Engram said, the air quotes tight end, even though he's really a receiver for Ole Miss, said during the week that Florida State has a defense that they like to play a lot of man because they're talented enough to do so. But he also said that they will drop back and cover 3 some and keep the offenses in front of them. That would be the play for Ole Miss. Make them run as many plays as possible so they don't beat you with that big strike with Chad Kelly's big arm.
And I feel like a lot of people, and I'm not comparing Ole Miss to Texas Tech in any way, but I feel like a lot of people do this to the air raid, you know, because it teams that aren't necessarily as good at running the football, they become sort of more one-dimensional in the red zone, or they have to involve the quarterback, and some teams aren't willing to do so. Ole Miss clearly is. Let's switch to the other side of the ball quickly. We're not going to talk quite as long on this one, I guess. So they lose Kimdiche, and he didn't have necessarily the season everybody thought he was going to have during every game. But, man, there were some games when that guy took over the ball game. You know, I'm interested to see your take on this, because I've seen some Ole Miss fans really kind of downplay the loss of Kimdiche, and I was like, man, I know that he had some problems there at times, but when he was on, just watching it, it does seem like he changed the complexion of that defense, because he required so much attention from opposing offensive line. Like, that you had to double him. There were games where he was just destroying any kind of single blocking he got.
And that's the key. You said it. He drew so much attention. He required that much attention. If you watch the Alabama game, that first half, Robert Kimdiche against Alabama was the most dominant football I've seen at Ole Miss, because Alabama thought that they could block him one-on-one, and that was a bad mistake. Most people gave him a double team, sometimes even a double team with back help. That was where he had his impact on the game. If you look at a stat sheet, you're not blown away. This is not. He didn't blow up the stat sheet because he drew so much attention. They have Isaac Gross back. They like DJ Jones. He was good at the end of last year. He's a really strong dude. Could play in the NFL. They have really good depth there with Breland Speaks and Benito Jones. But none of them will require the insane amount of attention that Kimdiche did. I think, though, on the flip side, there's probably a small part, and I don't know this to be fact, but heard enough secondary information to believe this to be true. There's a small sigh of relief that the brothers Kimdiche are gone from that locker room. They were a bit of a problem, and the team this go around seems to be more tight knit, more focused. Not as a direct result of them leaving, but I think the locker room's a little bit better because of it. But as far as the defensive mindset going into this Florida State game, Breland Speaks is going to be a great defensive lineman. He already is a pretty damn good one. But he's not Robert Kimdiche. He doesn't require the attention that Robert Kimdiche does. And they are very talented and deep, at least on the interior of the defensive line. But none of them are Robert Kimdiche. I mean, if he doesn't have his issues with drugs, he's a top 5 pick. They don't have that, and that's okay. They're still talented, but they're going to have to play it a little differently now because one guy is not receiving that much attention.
So would you say it's fair to say, though, that even though Robert's gone, that D-tackle is still probably the strength of this defense?
Yeah, defensive tackle for sure. It's the deepest position. with the most high-end talent. And frankly, that is kind of by default, because the rest of the defense, whether it be experience or maybe lack of talent or depth, none of them really jump off the page at you. Corner, they're pretty set. Kendarius Webster last year was very good. He's had an offseason. He's put on some weight, drawing the attention of NFL scouts. He's just a good football player at corner. And Tony Burns is at the other side of corner. He's good. He will talk all night long. He's going to make Florida State fans so mad, because he will talk and talk and talk, and he can give up an 80-yard touchdown pass. And
is he the one that Arkansas double moved really hard on that long touchdown?
Oh gosh, I can't remember.
Like he's the dude. He's the dude who jumps the routes a lot, like, and is real aggressive.
Yeah, he is. He's really aggressive, and sometimes it pays off, and others it doesn't. And he's a talented kid, but so corner's okay, but the rest of the defense is big question marks. You've got at the Rover, which is essentially a strong safety, on the depth chart, you've got a redshirt freshman and then a true freshman. And at the free safety, you've got a sophomore and Zedrick Woods, and then a guy in C.J. Hampton, who you may remember him through recruiting. Everybody wanted C.J. Hampton, including Nick Saban. And if he wasn't an in-state kid, he probably would have gone to Alabama. It was down to Ole Miss and Bama. And for whatever reason, the light just hasn't come on for him. So the defensive secondary is a huge question mark for Ole Miss. And nobody talks about the loss of Trey Elston and Mike Hilton for Ole Miss. Mike Hilton wore number 38 last year, if you watched any of their games, to those of you listening. He was a small guy, only 5'8" or so, but he was always in the right place and the most sure tackler on the team. And then Trey Elston was a 4-year starter at free safety. Those guys aren't getting the attention, or the loss of those guys isn't getting the attention that it deserves. Deontay Anderson was a guy that's going to play a lot this year. But he broke his hand in camp, and he's a true freshman. There's a lot of youth in the back end of that defensive secondary. And then on top of that, the linebacker position, you've got a good quality SEC linebacker in DeMarcus Gates. He's a good ball player, good SEC linebacker. And on the depth chart, as far as returning players, that's it. I mean, it's a scary depth chart, not in a good way. They got a couple of transfers from an Oregon State grad transfer, Rommel Mongeo, and he was Oregon State's leading tackler a year ago. But it's taking him a little bit to get acclimated to the speed of not the SEC, but this high level of football. So he's not going to start. He'll play a lot. But that's not a position that Ole Miss fans should be worried about. There's a lot of question marks on defense. The long answer to answer your question, but yeah, the defensive line is the strength, almost by default, because there's so many question marks elsewhere.
We're talking to Michael Borky of Super Talk Mississippi and Red Cup Rebellion on the Louisiana Hot Sauce line, brought to you by Louisiana Hot Sauce. Michael, Marquise Haynes is obviously the stud pass rusher for Ole Miss. I mean, one of the best pass rushers in the nation, just lightning quick. He jumps off the screen when you pull up any sort of Ole Miss game. Opposite him, though, I think has been a focus throughout Ole Miss's camp, from what I've been able to tell. It looks like Fadal Brown, their experienced kind of run stopper, strong side guy, is now going to give it a go after having a foot injury. What do you expect out of him and his backup slash counterpart? I mean, I don't know if you want to say backup, because I don't know how much Brown's going to be able to play. I don't know anything about John Youngblood. What does Ole Miss have at the other side opposite Haynes? And can Florida State afford to try to double Haynes? And if so, can Ole Miss make him pay with Youngblood or Brown on the other side?
Fadal Brown, I guess, today Hugh Freeze said that he would try to give 20 or 30 snaps. And if they can get 20 or 30 quality snaps out of him, Ole Miss fans should be happy about that, just because this time last week they were expecting him to be out completely. They said structurally his leg's okay. He can't hurt it anymore, but it's a pain tolerance thing. And they flew him out to Texas to get a special treatment, and he's still dealing with a lot of pain. That's a position, it's because of Marquise Haynes and because of Victor Evans, who's behind him on that side, who's also a pretty talented kid, similar build to Marquise Haynes, the defensive end position for Ole Miss doesn't get talked about as much as an area of concern. But without Fadal Brown, you mentioned John Youngblood. He's been in the program forever. He was a two-star tight end recruit out of Alabama, and he's wearing Ole Miss's number 38 jersey, which is given to a defensive player to honor Chucky Mullins, and it's a more of an off-the-field award than it is an on-the-field award. So they really like him as a kid. Dave Womack, the defensive coordinator, loves him as far as he will never make a mental mistake. But he's just like Sean Rawlings in a way, kind of athletically limited. He will do some good things. He's a big body, but he is not a replacement for Fadal Brown whatsoever. If Fadal Brown can only give you 20 snaps, the other 40 to 60 that Florida State may be on the field, they need to attack that side because they don't have, at this point, an adequate replacement for Fadal Brown. He started out at Florida International, realized he could play at a much bigger place. I mean, he's a huge guy. Really sturdy, good against the run, like you said. Won't blow you away in pass rush, but he's just a good, solid SEC defensive end, and they don't really have an adequate replacement for him. Youngblood has played a lot of football. He started in a game a couple years ago where they beat LSU at home when they were down to in the 50s in scholarship players, but there's not an adequate replacement there. They've talked about sliding defensive tackle Breland Speaks out to the end. He's athletic enough to do it. He's a big guy, right around 300 pounds. But he's never played that position before, at least in college. So they're going to have to kind of mix and match there a little bit. You'll see a lot of Victor Evans, I think, who's a similar build to Haynes, but you'll see a lot of him. That's an area that Florida State can try to exploit on the defensive line, despite it being really talented otherwise.
That makes sense. I mean, so if you're Florida State, it's don't let Marquise Haynes beat you. You know, if the other kid steps up, tip your cap.
Yeah. And Isaac Gross on the interior, even though he's a defensive tackle, a nose tackle, he's only about 260 pounds. And the benefit for him, and you've seen him on film, I'm sure, his reaction time is unbelievable. There's a still picture of him. And I want to say it was when they were playing Arkansas 2 years ago, where it's down the line of scrimmage, and you see the offensive line and the defensive line, and nobody has moved except for the center, and the ball's up between his legs, and Isaac Gross already has his head in line with the center's head. His reaction time and his quickness is unmatched. So he is effective in the pass rush from the nose tackle position because of his quickness. So if Ole Miss isn't going to get any pass rush from that strong side defensive end with Youngblood or a limited Fadal Brown, don't be surprised if Isaac Gross is effective in pass rush, even though he's playing the nose tackle spot. He's only 260 pounds.
So if you're a Florida State fan at home, Nikita Whitlock is the guy who Gross will probably remind you of. Remember the Wake Forest kid who was really, really good? I think he became a hybrid fullback type in the NFL. Just super quick, you know, only 260, 265 pounds. Michael, I think this has been extremely informative, man. I don't know if you guys are saving your game predictions there on Red Cup. I'll be sure to refer everybody over there to redcuprebellion.com.
Oh, I can give it. I don't know if we're saving it, but it's okay if I give it. I don't mind.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Well, in the big question mark, right, is whether or not Ole Miss can protect Chad Kelly, and he can still have a big game and Ole Miss lose. I hate giving out scores because, I mean, who knows what the actual score is going to be. But a guy at Red Cup, Duke All-American, has said the same thing, and I completely agree with this. If I was a betting guy, if I was going to go to Vegas and put money on Ole Miss or Florida State, I would bet on Florida State just with the points from 4, which is the spread now, all the way up to 10 or 11. I would take Florida State if it was a double-digit line still. I think Ole Miss has got a really good football team. They've got a lot of talent. Even in the defensive secondary, which is a question mark, they're talented kids. They're just young. Ole Miss has a good, really good football team. But Florida State has a national championship caliber football team. And people, especially from the Ole Miss side, are talking about DeAndre Francois, and, you know, it's his first real college action as a quarterback. But if Florida State teams well enough, they're not going to have to rely on him to make big plays because, you know, you've got one of the best running backs in the country there. And Ole Miss has fared well against good backs, especially last year, but I think it'll be close for a while, and then Florida State's depth and physicality and Ole Miss's inexperience on the back end, and they struggled tackling at camp, according to people who have been there and the coaches. That's what'll do it. Florida State's talent and depth will have them pull away late. So around a 10-point win, I think the Noles will take that one, essentially, at home.
We are getting word here tonight as well that Florida State has shut down practice, even like the 15-minute availability period to start the practice for the rest of the week, and no players will be made available, which has me thinking that they have other injuries that they're trying to hide and are trying to move some guys around. Personally, we know that they're saying Alec Everly is going, the starting center, is going to practice on Saturday or Friday or whatever, and if that goes well, he should play Monday. That's a very important thing because their backup center is out with an MCL injury. So they would be playing a true freshman in Andrew Pacelli if Everly can't go. But I'm wondering if there's not some more injuries that they're trying to sort of work around or try to rep other guys at other positions as sort of contingency plans for this, especially, you know, with the center. If they're already having to move guys around offensive line, I wonder if everybody else is healthy. That's I don't recall Jimbo Fisher doing this, so I'm wondering if something else is going on there. Timing of this is
What's your take on that overall? Ole Miss is in the Hugh Freeze era, significantly limited, not just media access, but any access to practice. And when I first started hearing about that, I thought it was the best thing that he's ever done there because too many people at Ole Miss, too many donors and people that should have been at practice were able to go to practice and had too much access. And he's essentially cut that off. And I think that's one of the best things he's done. It's kind of a trend across the country. Do you think that's a smart move? And even though you're a media guy, do you like that?
No, I think in some ways it can be a smart move for a program, but it can also be a bad move, right? Like it can help to quote unquote block out distractions if you think media is a distraction at the practice. Now, I do think that allowing just every single booster in the world, like you just described, at practice is a bad move. That nobody should do that. Where it really hurts you is if you're a typical, just get the quote, put the quote in a story, run the story outlet, you know? We have always been very heavy at Tomahawk on analysis and doing good analysis. And we have guys on our staff who coach high school ball. We have guys on our staff who played for Florida State, our writing staff. So when FSU shuts down practice, it hurts other outlets more because the quality of their analysis is not as good as ours is. Now, they might be better at some of the, you know, write the feature story with a bunch of quote stuff. And we do that too. But that's not the only club in our bag. You know what I mean? Now, here's the other thing. If you're going to shut down practice, I've still got guys who are able to watch practice. Sources on the team, family members, et cetera, especially doing the national recruiting thing, we'll still get the information out there. I mean, this happens every once in a while, and it's a good way to see kind of who's got sources and who doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not worried about that. Yeah. I got to get Ingram on in a minute, but I really, really appreciate you coming on tonight. This was good, really good, and I feel like any Florida State fan out there is going to come away after listening to this a lot more knowledgeable about Ole Miss and about this ball game on Monday night.
If they're not aware, one last thing, if they're not aware of the Chad Kelly rap song he did in high school, find it and link it in the post where this podcast goes.
Oh, we're putting this on the podcast.
Here. Oh, good. Okay.
I mean, if Chad Kelly wants to sue me for copyright, he can do it.
He's trying to get away from the whole swag Kelly thing, but when you wear suits like he does to press conferences, you can't really do that.
That suit, oh, man. And I got to say, man, Ole Miss fans are so fashionable, typically. Like, I work with one, and I went to law school with a couple other ones. I don't think those guys ever dress like scrubs. And Chad Kelly comes in there wearing a suit that he looks – I mean, looks like his like the public defender loaned it to him the morning outside the doors before you walk into court and say, I need this back in a minute. It's my, you know, kind of one-size-fits-all gig.
Well, you've seen it with signing day now. If a big recruit's going to Ole Miss, he's wearing a bow tie. He's got, like, good button-up shirt and these weird sport coats. They adapt it. The whole bow ties to football games thing at Ole Miss is really overblown. Part of it is you see a lot of pledges wearing ties, and there's the Greek system's huge at Ole Miss, so you see that. But the whole wearing ties and suits to football games is a minority among the fans. I mean, they're still dressed up and stuff, like they wore khakis and good shirts. But as far as wearing suits and blazers to games when it's not cold, it's not as extravagant as some lead to believe. But yeah, they are very fashion conscious up there in Oxford.
But great stuff there. Really fortunate to be able to bring on a guest like Michael. Informative, interesting, hopefully something that our audience will enjoy. One thing that I'm damn confident that our audience will enjoy and has enjoyed is Madison Social. Couldn't be more fortunate to be able to pair with them for another year. They have their pulse on this community and this fan base as much as really any entity could have. And they are very much the place that you want to consider hanging out, tailgating prior to the Ole Miss game if you are, in fact, headed to Orlando. FSU Ole Miss tailgate.com, right there at the corner of West Anderson, pretty much as close to the stadium as you can get. Tailgate with Madison Social proof. It is going to be a strong session prior to kickoff there on Monday.
That's right, man. You get a drink from Madison Social. You get a drink from Proof, all for a very low price. Make sure to hit up FSUOleMissTailgate.com. Perhaps most important, big screen TVs. You can watch all the pregame coverage. And private bathrooms, always really important and certainly worth it. Plus, food from Four Rivers Barbecue. Ingram, I know for a fact that I'm going to be hitting up this tailgate before I go into the press box. Might do a little double dipping on the Four Rivers food and then some of the press box food. Maybe I can get some intel as to what they got up in there. Probably going to do a little golf with my brother-in-law on Sunday since he's in Orlando as well. But on Monday, definitely heading over to the Madison Social tailgate. That's going to be a blast. But if you can't join me and the guys at Madison Social over at their tailgate this weekend, perhaps you're still in Tallahassee, hit up Madison Social's brick-and-mortar location. Great place to watch a game. Great pub-style food, but it's not, you know, just typical greasy bar food. Excellent drink selection, craft beers, good cocktails, always great scenery. On the big screen, they'll have the game. That's going to be a blast there, too. So make sure, however you're consuming the game, whether in Orlando or in Tallahassee, it's with our friends at Madison Social, always faithful supporters of the Nolcast.
But really good conversation that you had an opportunity to catch up with Michael Borky there. Hopefully our audience will find that informative, give them a better idea as to what to look for as far as a point of view from Ole Miss goes. One thing I wanted to touch on, and it's something that you discussed there briefly, both you and I have heard some rumblings that perhaps there's more of an injury conversation to be had that just has Eberle involved. And I don't know if it's related, I don't know if it's purely coincidental, but you then have the news today that Jimbo Fisher's basically ceased any and all access that the media has to the team, and it was already pretty limited as is. So maybe we're jumping to conclusions, maybe we're looking to correlate things that shouldn't otherwise be there. But it is certainly an interesting turn of events, and it's not a course of action that I can ever remember him taking previously.
You know, Ingram, I got asked on Twitter tonight right before we hit record on the second half of this, do you think that Jimbo Fisher is doing this to give all the footage to Showtime? No, I don't. No, Showtime is an all-access show. It's not all-access at the exclusion of all others. I don't think this has anything to do with Showtime at all. I think this has to do with injuries. I know we have both heard that there are other injuries on this team right now, other than Alec Eberle, to starters. And we do not know if they're going to play on Monday night. Now, problem is, I just got word about this right before the podcast, so I don't necessarily know exactly what's going on. But if I had to guess, I would think it's the injury issue, right? Like, why else would you shut down practice? For some background, you only get to watch about the first 15 minutes of practice anyway, a couple periods. And in that time, Florida State does not do anything proprietary. Like, they're not going to show you trick plays or anything weird or abnormal or out of the ordinary. They don't do any game plan stuff. It's almost all just stretching and individual period. So it's not like Florida State will be shutting down practice to hide new formations or to hide new plays. The reason why you shut down practice is to hide guys playing positions they do not normally play. That is the reason why you do it, period. Unless there's something I'm missing, but I'm going to hold fast to that. Now, maybe the injury concerns are overblown. Given that they've shut down practice for the rest of the week, I kind of doubt that. Who knows if Alec Eberle's actually going to practice? Jimbo Fisher tonight in the call-in show, we're recording this on Wednesday, admitted that Alec Eberle did not play in the last scrimmage. Remember we said that? And people told us, that's not true. We saw him at practice. And we said, no. He just did individual. He didn't do any of the contact stuff in the scrimmage. Well, guess what? I don't know if it was intentional or not tonight, but Jimbo Fisher admitted that Eberle didn't play in the scrimmage. And he said it when he was trying to compliment Andrew Buscelli, the third string center, who is having to start unless Eberle can make a comeback because the second string center, Martinez, is out with an MCL injury. So, to me, I think this is fairly concerning, man. Like, depending on the extent of the injuries, I really wish I could kind of delay giving my pick on this, but we're not going to do that. I'm just going to have to kind of split the baby and hedge here a little bit when we go to do our picks, because I don't know who's going to play and who's not. Now, tonight, Jimbo Fisher said that Alec Eberle is going to practice, looks like he's on schedule to practice, I guess, and if all goes well, he'll be playing on Monday. But we know that he practiced, 4 days ago now, I think it was, and then basically re-injured or re-migraine symptom or re-concussed or whatever you want to believe. I'm really kind of not trusting of the injury narratives that come out of Florida State. I really don't believe that they're always factual or truthful, to be honest. And I think that you and I have done this for, 7 years now, 6 years? And we've seen time and again, all of a sudden, guys who were never on the injury report all of a sudden aren't playing. Funny how that works, you know? So I'm not trying to sound like angry media guy here, but you can say that Alec Eberle's scheduled to practice later this week, and if all goes well, he'll be playing on Monday. But how do we know if we can't even at least go out to practice and see the first couple of minutes if he's actually practicing or not? How are we going to report on that? That makes it really difficult. Anyhow, let's talk more about the actual ballgame.
Let's do it, bud. Let's transition a little bit of a game preview. Certainly, the conversation that you had with Borky there serves as somewhat of a game preview, but let's circle back, have a conversation as far as what to look for, what a general fan could look for in the first 5-10 minutes of a game, try to get an idea as to whether or not things on the whole will go Florida State's way or a couple particular key position battles that will more than likely dictate the outcome of the game.
I think that in listening to Michael, and he was incredibly informative, the main thing that occurred to me is, and also knowing what I know about Florida State's offense, the need to stay in proper leverage when Florida State is on offense, right? Ole Miss is probably going to sell out against the run on early downs, but yet play to keep the ball in front of them. That's kind of what the typical Dave Womack defense does. I know at Tomahawk Nation, they had a good article about Jimbo Fisher typically going against Dave Womack's defenses. And I know a lot of Ole Miss fans don't love how Dave Womack doesn't bring a whole lot of pressure necessarily and relies on his front four, which actually has been a really effective strategy for Ole Miss and can be frustrating at times, but the downside of that is giving up big plays. In my opinion, I think Florida State is a good run-blocking team. I think they have the ability to be a very good play-action passing team, especially with the threat of Dalvin Cook and the aggressiveness with which they come off the football. And this is doubly true if a guy like Alec Eberle has to play center, or if any other offensive lineman have to play due to injury or something, because they have that natural aggressiveness, and run blocking is more intuitive and easier for a younger player than pass blocking is typically. Where I think Florida State is not good yet necessarily, because I don't think Rick Leonard's any good at this yet, and if it's Pacelli, I'm really not super confident in his ability to do this, it's just straight up pass blocking. I think early downs advantage Florida State. Third and short, third and medium, advantage Florida State. Long down and distance, potentially big advantage to Ole Miss, because they're able to pin their ears back. They don't have to worry about the Dalvin Cook factor quite so much. I think that the leverage split in this game, the importance of maintaining leverage of down, is greater than in your average game. And so if you're Jimbo, yes, you have to run the football. But if Ole Miss is giving you wide open looks on early downs, and Fisher has shown time again he will do this, you have got to throw the football on early downs and make Ole Miss respect that as well. You can't just be, you know, run for two, third and six. That's not what you want, right? It's cool to not put a lot of pressure on your young quarterback, but oftentimes giving him those early throws that are easier because they're open, because everybody's focusing on Dalvin Cook, is actually a better way to play things, you know? So in my opinion, I think that staying out of the long down and distance is going to be really, really crucial. If you look at Ole Miss's defensive ends, not knowing what Fadal Brown is going to be able to give you, for Ole Miss, we think probably a maximum of 20 or 30 snaps and of questionable effectiveness, perhaps. The Haynes kid, their defensive end, who's a total pass rushing stud, he's not very big. I mean, he's probably maximum 230 pounds. We're talking smaller than Brandon Jenkins was in his prime, but perhaps more explosive too. I mean, a really explosive kid with a relentless motor. That's exactly the kind of kid that you need to run play action at, right? All night. Because you have to make him respect the run and think about the run, as opposed to just being able to pin his ears back, where he will probably beat your right tackle, especially if you don't give him help, or a lot of help, if it's just straight third and eight, third and nine type stuff. This is also where Francois has to be smart and realize, don't try to play hero ball if you get in long down and distance. If it's there, hit it. But don't have this feeling where you have to make the throw, especially early in the ballgame. Later in the ballgame, if you're down or something, obviously you got to do it. But punting is not the worst thing if you end up losing the leverage battle on a certain drive.
To me, this really sounds like a game that, and not that this guy won't be a prominent part of the offense throughout the course of the year, but a chance for Ryan Izzo to really have a standout game, both in this, what he brings you in blocking, but particularly what he has the opportunity to offer you in the pass game, offer you a little bit of an easier throw than what otherwise might be available to Francois, and a guy that certainly gives you the opportunity to control down and distance, opportunity to pick up 6-7 yards. Izzo is maybe one particular person that I look at and wonder if he is not somebody that wouldn't have one of the better statistical performances.
I totally agree with you, man. I think that this is a game where you have got to make Ole Miss play in a disciplined fashion, you know, and to Ole Miss is a young football team. They have some seniors on their team, there's no doubt, but a lot of their team is predicated on elite level athleticism, which they do have. But as we heard from Michael, you know, they have a number of younger players who are certainly prone to making mistakes. And I think if you're Florida State, you really have to put them in situations where you expose their inconsistency through making them rep plays over and over again, you know, on defense, not allowing them to put you in big time down and distance leverage disadvantage. When you're on defense, keeping things in front of you. You know, Florida State likes to play aggressively at times, but I think this is certainly something that where you have got to force Ole Miss to move down the field in a controlled fashion against this Florida State defense to see if they can be consistent.
But we talked some about an area of concern that we have for Florida State. That's the offensive line, the interior of the offensive line in particular. What do you think Florida State's strongest mismatch, strongest advantage is as far as positional group when compared to Ole Miss?
You know, normally I would say Florida State's defensive backs, right? But I think that given the circumstance with Ole Miss's talent at receiver, I think that's not necessarily a wash, but it's closer than it usually is in most of the games that Florida State plays. I would say looking at this, potentially Florida State's tackles in the run game against Ole Miss's guys on the defensive edge, but I'm actually going to focus on the linebackers. I know in talking in that conversation we just had, but also on the Red Cup Rebellion podcast, which I joined last night, they've had to move DeMarcus Gates, one of their best players, to middle linebacker, and he's ideally fit to play more on the outside. But they brought in two guys at linebacker, Dietrich Bing Dukes, a junior college kid, and then Ramal Mayeo, who we just heard about. Those two guys not starting was a surprise in Oxford, right? Bing Dukes, they told me last night, was kind of slower than expected. And then Rommel was apparently kind of swimming and not picking up the defense as fast as they had hoped. Their defensive coordinator has made some comments about needing to really simplify things in the back end so their young players can get them. And I think I'm going to say Florida State's linebacker or Florida State's running back, Dalvin Cook and the crew, and their slot receivers slash tight ends on the safeties and linebackers group of Ole Miss is probably the biggest advantage FSU has in this ball game with FSU's offense. Now, on the other side, we already heard about the concern that Ole Miss has at the tackle position. Florida State has Josh Sweat, and they have DeMarcus Walker. Ole Miss is probably going to see a better defensive end combo in Alabama, but you might be talking about two of the top five defensive end combos in the nation there in those two games. And we're talking about the first game of the year out the gate. They got a guy, Rod Taylor, who does have elite level feet, doesn't have great length at left tackle, is probably more suited to be a really elite level guard if he could add consistency to his game. But out of necessity, he's having to play left tackle. I think Florida State, if they play it right and if they bring their A game, is going to have the ability to take away a lot of the run game, to, as we like to say, take the option out of the spread option, but do so because it's dominating on the edges against Ole Miss, and making those outside runs take a couple more lateral steps than they want. And that strings the run out just a bit more, which gives Florida State's linebackers and safeties time to flow over the top and make that tackle a couple yards shorter, maybe a couple yards in the backfield, even at times behind the line of scrimmage. I think Florida State has got to do a great job defending the run with its defensive ends and its cornerbacks against Ole Miss, because Ole Miss's receivers absolutely will block you. They can be very physical. If Florida State can do that and you make Ole Miss more one-dimensional than they want to be, then I think that is a distinct positional advantage there at defensive end in the run game against the offensive tackles against of Ole Miss. And then potentially you'll see the pass rush advantage used against Ole Miss's offensive tackles.
Fair enough. But you feel comfortable giving an idea as far as a score prediction?
Yeah. I do. Now I'm not super comfortable with not knowing who's going to play for Florida State at center.
Yes. Yeah, kind of got a little muddied in the last 24 hours. Absolutely. Yeah. It's hard to predict any game. It's particularly hard to predict a Monday night game on a Wednesday evening when you don't know exactly what injuries may be taking place or who's lining up where. There's certainly some questions that are yet to be answered, and it doesn't look like we'll have a better way or a better idea as to how to answer them.
So the line in this game, I think, is 5. And we already heard Michael predict an over-under or an Ole Miss. He said he would bet it up to Florida State into double digits. I think Florida State's going to win this ballgame. And I remember we had our podcast a couple weeks ago, and we talked about the depth they had at the offensive line and how it was probably Jimbo Fisher's deepest offensive line. I think that depth is going to be put to the test. You know, does Derek Kelly have to play guard? Is Alec Eberle going to play center, or is he not going to be able to overcome these quote unquote migraine issues? And will it be a true freshman in Boselli? I don't know the answers to those, but I do know that you, and I know we didn't expect Florida State to potentially lose their top two centers during camp. I mean, that's really kind of just freakishly bad cluster luck, you know, with the clustering of injuries in one spot. I'm going to say that the game is going to be lower scoring than people think, actually. I know Ole Miss, their offense just crushed their defense in their scrimmages to the point where Hugh Freeze in one of those press conferences sounded kind of exasperated, you know. But I think this game is going to be lower scoring. I think it's going to be more in the high 40s or low 50s as opposed to the upper 50s, low 60s, like the over-under of 57, 57.5 seems to imply. So, Ingram, I think I'm going to go 27-20, and I realize that implies that Florida State is going to kick two field goals, and they have freshman kickers, which scares the daylights out of me. But I think the 20 score for Ole Miss also implies that Florida State does a good job of forcing Ole Miss to kick some field goals in the red zone. The unit that I'm most confident in this game is Florida State's defense. And I think they can really carry the day for an offense that might be dealing with more injuries than we're certain of right now. My percentage chance of victory, I'm going to go with 68, which is just slightly too low, okay. You think? Or what?
It's the exact same thing that I had, actually.
All right, so we write these down before the show, just so you guys, a little behind the scenes baseball here, so we don't, like, try to crib off each other. You really had 68?
I, hand to the Lord, had 68%, yeah. I've got a little bit of a different score than you, a little lower score, a little bit of a closer game, but I had 68%, which is a strange number to choose in general, but yeah. That is what I had. This is something we're going to try to do this year, give a predicted score, but also give a percentage chance of victory. We're also going to try to keep track of in-conference ACC games, pick those as well, and have a running tab. But, yeah, I have 68%. I have Florida State winning a game 24-17. So even a lower score game. And a significantly lower score game than maybe Las Vegas thinks it will be.
Ingram, the only ACC versus ACC game this week is Georgia Tech and Boston College.
They played in Avaya Stadium, yes, sir.
Yes, in Ireland. So we both took Georgia Tech. So we don't need to count that. How we're going to keep score is this. We're only going to announce it as far as like who we're taking if we have a difference of opinion. Otherwise, we'll probably just quickly discuss the game. I really don't feel like we need to discuss the Georgia Tech-Boston College game at all. I will almost certainly not watch that game because Florida State's not playing Boston College until much later in the season, and I am not going to get up at 4 a.m. to watch probably the two of the most boring ACC offenses in the country.
Is it 4 a.m.? Is it really 4 a.m.?
It's something ridiculously early. It's like not – like if you're watching it live, you probably have a relative on the team.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'll catch a glimpse of that. It's certainly not a style of ball that either team plays that will maybe do the best job of spreading football, at least our level or our form of football. Although I will say, I think I mentioned this before, but and this is not to take the podcast down a tangent, but I was in Oslo, Norway last year and was walking down like the into the city center, look over to my right, and there's a team. One, there's a football, like full pads playing, youth team, just sitting there running the option. I was surprised, and have seen a lot more. That sport is starting to catch on more and more. I don't know that Georgia Tech versus Boston College is perhaps our best export to show it off, but it is something that seems to be grabbing hold of in Western Europe and maybe a little bit in Scandinavia.
That is an interesting thing, you know?
Yes, comments from abroad, absolutely. So, all right, bud, I think we've hopefully done a good enough job tonight giving people a real idea. A little bit hesitant of some of the variables that we don't know, but that's always going to exist. You and I both put a little bit of time into a predicted score, and hopefully that will carry on and be true, and we can look back in what is a nice little victory over an SEC West foe. So we will have some type of instant reaction podcast that you will do. I know you're going to the game, may not be within the, you know, 30 minutes after kickoff or something like that, but we'll try to give that product and then have two follow-up podcasts next week and resume our normal schedule. Want to thank everybody for listening. Want to thank some of the involvement and engagement that we've had on social media. You guys are truly an exceptional listening audience, and really want to thank you. Exceptional feedback and something that we've enjoyed. And I know that Bud and I are both incredibly excited to be able to start to talk about real games and real results and real outcomes.
Absolutely enjoyed it. Thanks to our sponsors, Louisiana Hot Sauce and Madison Social. As always, if you got any feedback for us, hit us up on Twitter at Nolcast. Also, iTunes reviews. We like 5 stars. We have a lot of them. We could use even more. Keep us as the number one Nol podcast. That's how we're able to get sponsors and ratings, and that's how we're able to keep this thing nice and free and consistently coming into your earbuds, your car stereo, wherever you happen to listen to the Nolcast. Until next time, Ingram, it's been a pleasure as always.
Chad Kelly, number 12, swag. Under Armour, All-American, swag. Player of the year, All-State, swag. Doing it big, G5, let's get it, swag. Watch how I touch down, Chad Kelly. Hit the field, it's going down, Chad Kelly. Number one QB, Chad Kelly. The defense ain't seeing me, Chad Kelly.